Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I'm Mo Abdelbaki, and this, right here, is the Paisley Penny Arcade. Where the arcade machines? Well, they're in the back. I mean, it's not that they're not around. They're here, but I've turned off the lights for a little while just because the electricity got so high. You know, who can afford anything lately? Have you seen the price of anything lately? How are you? Oh, wow. What a week. Do you agree? What a week. What a week. For those of you who recall last week's show, if you hung in there, and those of you who didn't hang in there, well, I don't blame you, I guess. I don't know. It was weird. I was in a very strange place, I guess for a reason. Toward the end of the show, I said that I felt something coming, and I wasn't sure what, and it was like, I don't know if it's bad or good, and I just said, I feel something coming. I feel it, I know that I feel it, and I feel something coming. And lo and behold, the very next day, the Air India plane crashed upon takeoff. And we're going to talk about that a little bit because something out of that, wow, just really weird, very strange thing happened. There's one thing that occurred. And then after that, Senator Alex Padilla, the next day, and that was a tragedy, an absolute tragedy. But the very next day, I think it was the next day, Senator Alex Padilla was just asking a question of Kristi Noem about immigration and so on. And that guy was taken forcibly out of the room, the press conference, where he was wrestled to the ground and handcuffed. Now, he's a senator, United States senator. And he's not the only one. A comptroller was arrested on Saturday. And these are like five people. There was a mayor in New Jersey and a senator in New Jersey. And I mean, we're talking five government people have been arrested. And that's not normal. That's just not a normal thing. We got a new war going on. That thing happened. So I've been feeling things coming. And here's the one that kind of flipped me out, was the horrible, tragic, unbelievably sad shooting of two state senators in Minnesota. And unbelievably horrible. Come to find out, and this is bizarre beyond belief, but my son knows the shooter. Not intimately by any stretch of the imagination, but he does know him through his wife's stepmother. The stepmother is from the North, the Great White North there, and every third year they go up for Thanksgiving. And so three or four times, whatever it's been, they've met this man and had dinner with him, and he seemed like a very nice guy, don't they all? And obviously he has some very severe problems. And he wrote me the day it happened. He said, I just saw his picture on TV. I know him. And this has affected him incredibly, as you can only imagine. And I guess I shouldn't say too much about it. But so when I was saying on Wednesday that I felt things coming, man, oh, man, things came. and not the least of which was the amazing, immense psychic, or well, psyche of my own son, who is having to deal with this emotional upheaval of knowing someone who has done something like this. Had dinner with him and that sort of thing, on numerous occasions. And you say, how in the world and what in the world? So it's been that kind of week, and it's been a very eventful week. And of course, we had the No Kings protests in conjunction with the 250th anniversary of the Army. And the big parade, $45 million parade, and blah, 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 blah. And just stress. But, of course, the major thing for me was the tragedy of the airplane going down. And of course, a brand new war that we're dealing with between Israel and Iran, with Israel starting the bombing. And now the United States apparently pitching in. Now, I'm just putting this in context with the idea of this wave of energy that I felt on Wednesday. It was messing me up. And I think that's the only way I can put it, is that it was messing me up. If you listen to that show, and you don't have to go back and listen to it, it's not important, but I was kind of a wreck. And that's the thing about these psychic energies. They're like a tide. And sometimes you can feel them, and sometimes you can't, but there are times when they're just so oppressive that they just feel like it's like... it's like this incredible pressure that gets put on you. And talk to anyone who does this stuff, and you've probably felt it before as well. And you don't always know what to attribute it to. This is what keeping a diary is good for, or a journal, because you can go back and say, oh, maybe that's what was. And I'm convinced we all feel it. It's just we don't all... You know, we're not all, when you do what I do for a living, and those of us who do this, we'll tell you that there are times when we just feel completely out of sorts, out of place, and out of touch, that's for sure. But it was really rough. I mean, really, really, really just rough as could be. And I thought, man, what is going on? And so it was that type of weekend, that type of week, just solid weirdness going on. Now, we're going to talk about some very metaphysical stuff today. So if I already lost listeners thinking I was going to talk about politics, they're wrong. This is not about politics today. It's not about that at all. It's not even about world issues. I'm going to get into the meat and potatoes of occultism, talking about these things that happen and how to find out kind of what it's about. We're going to get into that a little bit because I think this is a really excellent opportunity to get into what occultism is. People think that occultism is a bad thing, or the word has a terrible connotation in modern times, which is, you know, not necessarily... it shouldn't even be there because there's nothing wrong with it. It's the reputation that it has because of ignorance. And I'll use that term with a great deal of joy, because there's a lot of ignorance in the world today. And that's one of the things that goes right along with it, is ignorance about all sorts of things. And there's ignorance on both sides of the playing field. Without doubt, there's ignorance everywhere. And the internet helps that. I saw a piece just the other day about Aleister Crowley, and it was so steeped in stupidity and ignorance, and people chiming in with their own brand of ignorance. And I almost said something. I thought, why? Why should I say anything? Because nothing I say can erase the stupidity that I'm seeing in this post. It was just so ridiculous. I had a picture of him. And he was in that pose where he's wearing that triangular hat and it has the eye, and he's doing the, you know, and it's like, oh, for goodness sake, he's doing the horns thing with his thumbs. And it's like, oh, for God's sake, they don't understand what it is they're seeing, and they don't understand what it was he was doing. And so there is this incredible unknowing quality to it, and the person presenting it thinks they know what they're talking about, and they absolutely did not. Crowley was not evil. First of all, they said he was a traitor to the British government. Had that been the case, Aleister Crowley would have been hanged, for sure, because they did not, in World War II, there was not a lot of tolerance for traitors. He was maybe a triple agent for the Brits. He certainly did work at one time closely with Germany in a way that was like, wow, how can he do that? And the way he can do that is by going back to England and telling them things. He lived in Germany for 4 years, 28 through 32, I believe, are the years, which was pretty formative stuff for the Nazis. You know, that's pretty hot time. And that was Berlin when it was really, you know, that's cabaret years. And he also wrote for an American newspaper, a pro-Nazi newspaper called The Fatherland. And that's about as heinous as it gets. But he still consulted with Winston Churchill about stuff. He was also a friend of Ian Fleming's, who was in the OSS. So one has to, and he was allowed to live in Hastings in a retirement home until he died. So we have to assume that he was not a traitor, that he was in fact just an old heroin addict who, died. And, so is Keith Richards, who's an old heroin addict, reformed, but once one, probably always one. That's a different story. So, it really is that it's an interesting thing, looking at all these trends and all these feelings that we get. It's just amazing. I want to talk also today about keeping hope alive, which I think is very important. Let me tell you a quick story. Yesterday, we decided, we had a very busy day, and we decided that we were going to just grab some fast food. So I got in the car and went to the fast food place, and I was driving through. And I'm the type of guy who talks to people, as maybe you can tell. And I drove through, and it was a young guy. I imagine he was about 18, 19. Maybe he had just graduated from high school. I don't know. But he, got to the window and gave me the price, and I said, "Hi, how are you?" And he looked at me, and he could tell that I really kind of cared. I wanted to know how he was. And he said, "Okay, how are you?" I said, "Well, I'm good, and I said, "Are you good?" He said, "Honestly, no." He said, "And I live in a world that is not in a good place." And I got it, and he looked really forlorn, if I can use that word. And I said, "Well, let me tell you something. I grew up in a time when I lived in a world that was not in a good place as well." And he said, "Yeah, I can imagine that." And I said, "And you know what? It worked out. It worked out. There were times that were pretty bad and other times that turned out pretty well. It will work out. You just have to hang in there. You just have to hold out hope." He said, "Honestly, I don't have much hope." I couldn't believe I was having this deep a conversation with a young man that I just met. But I was having that deep a conversation with him. And he said, "Really?" I said, "Yes, really." I said, "You've got a long road ahead of you. And you have to have hope, and you have to keep the faith. And you have to believe in the goodness of the world. It's true. There are a lot of bad stuff going on right now, but you have to hang in there and just do it." And he said, "Well, thanks." And so he left, and he was going to get the stuff. So I was, listening to the radio or whatever it is now. It's a stereo, whatever. Who knows? And he came back, and, I was kind of lost in my own world. And he goes, "Sir, excuse me." And I turned back, and he said, "You were one of them, weren't you?" And I knew exactly what he meant. I knew exactly what he meant. I said, "Yes, I was." He said, "How was that?" I said, "It was fantastic. It was great. Being one of them was a pretty good time, but it was also, it was nice to feel alive. It was nice to feel like I was on the cutting edge of something. And you can feel that way too. All you have to do is decide that that's what you want to do. And you have to keep going. And you can't lose faith and you can't lose hope. So we talked a little bit more. I got my food finally. And before I left, he said, "Thank you very much. You have no idea how much it meant to me to talk to you today." And I said, "You're welcome." And I just want to make that point that we who do have a little bit different point of view, we who have hope and really have it in our hearts, make a big difference to people. And we never know how big a difference we're making. We never know exactly the impact that we're going to make on people. And I say that all the time, and I write it in the Power Peak, and I saw it firsthand yesterday, and it was absolutely wonderful. And it was remarkable to see, because we do make a difference. And it's a big difference. And don't ever think we don't. It's absolutely imperative that we keep this in mind, that we absolutely realize just how important it is to keep our attitude up when we can, and to know that that little bit can make a huge difference. It did yesterday. It helped him, and it made me feel pretty good too. So, with that in mind, let's go forward, and we're going to talk about something now. The Air India plane that went down with many, many people, 260-some people on the plane. Everyone died except for one survivor. One survivor. And I saw this horrible footage of the plane going down, and this gigantic fireball comes up, and there is one survival. Yeah. Which is a miracle. Absolutely amazing. And he was seated in seat 11A. Now, immediately that struck me. Maybe it struck you too. But when I heard that, 11A, it immediately hit me that I should check on that in my copy of 777. Now, what is 777? Well, pardon me. It is a book by Aleister Crowley put together. It's a compendium. It came gleaned out of the Equinox series, or Equinox series, depending on how you want to pronounce that, of numerological studies, Kabbalistically. And you go back to what's called Sefer Sephiroth. And in that, every word in the Hebrew Bible, in the Hebrew holy writings, has a numerological equivalent. So I went to, and this is old stuff. I'm not just, you know, let me see, where's my copy? I made some notes. I must have left the book in the living room where I do most of my stuff to irritate my wife. I do all my stuff out. I don't do it for that. It just does that. But I wrote down first, it was 11A, and A is the first letter of just about every alphabet. So it comes out to 111, and that's what I did. I did first of all 111, just to check. And it came out to, the letter Aleph is spelled that way. So it's a beginning of something new, maybe. And this is how you do this stuff. This is what occultists do. They look for the message in this, because it struck me that there was a message there. It's an ox. Okay, an ox. Well, that didn't make a lot of sense. It's the Fool. Well, the Fool is the first card in Tarot. And that goes along with the idea of Aleph, which is the beginning. But of course, Aleph rules the Fool card. But it's also ruin and destruction. And that's like, oh, well, okay. It's also sudden death. And that makes sense, because all of that is there. This is all from the number 111, 111. It's also mad, as in madness. And I think, oh, God, doesn't that reflect what's going on in the world right now? There is so much madness going on right now. I believe that there are so many leaders right now who are showing what I consider to be traits of madness, because they're more than willing to sacrifice the lives of others for whatever reason may be, whatever reasons they decide, that they're just saying, okay, well, let's go ahead and sacrifice other people's lives, whether it be the lives of the people that they're bombing, or the lives of the people they're sending into harm's way, or the lives of the people that they're saying, let's round them up like cattle, or whatever lives they're doing. They're just willing to sacrifice people's lives, and also the lives of, you know, farmers, the lives of merchants, the lives of people who depend upon certain things, the lives of people in Gaza, all these people who are willing to do this on some premise of what? Of what? Political expediency? Something. So they're doing all of this. And to me, it's madness, because what we're doing is what they're doing. And this isn't just in that small area. It's all over. It's all over the world where there are little wars here and there and revolutions going on and all sorts of inhumanity to other people. I mean, just unbelievable to me, the madness of our species over and over and over again. And I thought, well, that's certainly going on too. One of the meanings of the number 111, 111, is a Holocaust. I will say, in my opinion, that there is a Holocaust going on, and that is in Gaza. It cannot be denied. Certainly it isn't as many as in World War II, but give it time. If given enough time, it might turn into that. It would have turned into that. It's also the word Aum. Aleph, well, A-U-M. Those words, those letters. And that makes perfect sense, because Aum is the universal sound, the vibration, the meditation. And if we listen to that, then we're listening to the universe, and that's what's needed. So I also looked at the concept of taking a little bit further, you know. Where do we go from there? Well, you go to the number 3, you can do that, and you can go further into that, and you can add the numbers together. You can look at 11, you can go to 14. I mean, you can do all sorts of things. I wish I had my book here. I could really delve into that. I must be in the other room. I thought it was right here. See, I'm not prepared, and I apologize for that. But this is how you do it. You do these types of things. And you jump into the book. The number 13, for example, is unity and beloved. And if you double it, it's 26. And I know what I was doing. I was that was a different thing. My mind was wandering, and I was trying to... It was for another project I'm doing about the Fool card. That's why, because I got to the Fool card, and it made me think about something else I'm doing with the Fool card. But if you ever decide to get involved in that sort of mind game, you might pick up a copy of 777 and other Kabbalistic writings of Aleister Crowley, because, as it's known, because it really is a fascinating book. I spent much time on that book, and it's pretty wonderful. It's not easy, but once you get the hang of it, whoa, it really is. The whole premise is this, is that any word with the same numeric value as any other word is connected. End of story. So, for example, the word, if we were doing English gematria, as it's known, we would say that the word dog and the word God, because they have the same letters, have a very close connection to each other. And we might say that we are to God as dogs are to us. So the way someone who doesn't know dogs very well might say it would be that we are subservient to God and dogs are subservient to us. And I would say that God is holy and dogs are holy. That's what I would say, because I know dogs. And there's a holiness to dogs that is absolutely true and wonderful and gigantic, that dogs are incredibly holy. Mine sure have been, and mine is right now. And the fact that Christy Noem shot a dog in a gravel pit for reasons that are her own betrays something about her that is so incredibly unthinkable to me. And she had her reasons, and I know that once upon a time, dogs were not considered members of the family. They were considered something quite different. But I can't forgive it. And I know it's not up to me to forgive her, but it just really repulses me. My father was a veterinarian, and I saw things growing up in the vet school where he taught that stick with me and are stuck with me. But I also realized that he was teaching, and he had to do these things to teach other veterinarians their trade and how to do what they did. And I knew him as a complete lover of animals, especially of dogs and horses and cats. He loved them. But, and it was hard. But it was his experiences and those things I saw that made me decide I could never, ever be a vet, because I just can't bring myself to those things. But for people who do it with gusto, I don't know. That's a completely different story. But the point is that we dip into this book, and it can reveal things to us that are pretty amazing. So, hope. How do we get hope from such information? You see, why does such a thing as the Kabbalah exist? Well, it exists to answer questions, to give insight. And that insight delivers hope, because it reveals the truth in strange times and in difficult situations. Now, this in no way means that what happened in that plane crash, that horrible tragedy, was to deliver a message. By no stretch of the imagination is that the meaning. Not by any concept. See, I have a tendency not to believe that there is a reason for everything. Now, my wife believes there is a reason for everything, that everything has a reason. Everything. And I'm not of that mind. I believe in accidents. And I know, and coincidences, I know that seems odd for someone in my state of the union, in my field. But I happen to believe that there are things that just happen, because I consider myself to be a naturalist, in that the world is a very natural place, and we are surrounded by nature, and things in nature come together. Now, maybe there is some sort of hand that makes everything do what it does, but I would be completely remiss to say that I understand it, just as I would be equally remiss to say that I understood karma. I don't. I don't have a clue. I could no more say that I understood karma than it would be ridiculous. Just as I could say that it could be karma that is guiding exactly what's happening to the world right now as anything else, I look to this country and see that it was born and basically created through servitude, through enslavement. And I think to myself, well, that's not cool. That's not the best way to start a country, by stealing people from their native land, bringing them over in chains, and then forcing them to work to death sometimes. And then eventually, after a huge war where, 600,000 people died? Then saying, okay, fine, we'll let you go. And then keeping them in financial servitude, you know, forever, essentially. Things are just now beginning to change somewhat. What sort of karma does that bring upon the nation itself? So I don't know that this isn't what's going on. But then again, I don't know that it is either. So I don't pretend to understand these things. Who knows? Who knows? It's a very strange thing, these laws of nature. See, but the occultist looks for the truth in numbers, because the numbers, they don't lie. They don't lie. They tell us the truth. And when you stop and think about it, these numbers are present in just about all oracles. Well, most oracles, not all, of course. But they're in the I Ching, because most systems of one sort or another are based upon the tossing of dice or coins or whatever they may be. In one form or another, you're saying, answer my question, and you're doing so through specific, like the shuffling of cards. That's mathematics, whether you know it or not. You're saying, I'm going to shuffle up these cards, and these cards have meaning to me, but I am shuffling them up, and there are mathematic probabilities. You know, that's kind of cool when you stop and think about it. Very, very interesting stuff. So, math is kind of the basis of everything. Numbers and words. And words, because in the beginning there was the word. The word was logos. Logos. If you look at any Greek dictionary, ancient Greek dictionary, you'll have pages of definitions for the word logos. Logos. It can mean a lot of stuff. The ancient Egyptian god Thoth, Tut, Thoth, he was a god of words. His words could heal. I suppose they might have killed as well, although that wasn't his thing. But he was a healer, and he was a creator, you know? And he could write words that were magical. That's right. You know? Heka Neter. Words of the gods. And words were powerful. Words are incredibly powerful. The concept of creation by words, manifestation, isn't new. There's nothing new about it. Nothing new about it. We have this idea of spells, using words to create something. This idea of manifestation, where we program ourselves or program words or program through writing something down, and then we manifest through the repetition of those words or the recitation of something or the reading of those words on a constant level. The top 10 lists, something that I've taught many, many times. That's nothing new. The ancient Egyptian god Ptah. What a name. P-T-A-H. Ptah. Now, I've always thought that his name came directly from the fact that suddenly he existed. He was the first existing deity. And he suddenly found himself hurtling through darkness, through space, upon a rock that he self-created so he'd have somewhere to sit. And he suddenly took in a breath. Yeah, right? His name being that first big breath. Pardon me. After doing that, I need to take a sip of tea here. There's a lot of onomatopoeia in ancient Egyptian language. Yes, there is. Like their word for cat, mau, mau. Or for donkey, ah-ah. I like that. Or the girth with the wind god, shoo. Exactly. So Ptah, who is this creator god, who is usually shown in mummiform. Well, not exactly mummiform, but he's wrapped up pretty much. He's tight, and his hands are crossed, and he is shown wearing a skull cap to show that he's very, very old. And kind of staring off in a distance, I always feel him. I feel Ptah as being so old and being absolutely absent. And let me tell you what I mean by that. So here's the deal. Ptah created everything. Everything. And here's how he created. So let's say he created an ant, the insect. So he not created just an ant. He created the prototype of ants. But he created not just the prototype, but exactly what an ant would be. But he had to visualize it first. So he visualized everything about that ant, its physiology, down to the capillaries, down to the mandibles, down to its entire system of neurology. I mean, we're talking everything about the ant. It's the way it's pheromones were, the way it laid its scent out for other ants to follow it, its social nature, its intelligence, everything about ants that would ever exist. And then he had to think about exactly how many ants there would be in its entire lifetime, in its entire existence until it went extinct. He had then analyzed and imagined every ant that would ever live. Every ant that would ever exist. He saw that all in his mind's eye. Every species of ant. Every species of ant. And everything they would eat and everything they would do. And once he had everything about ants, everything about them, and I mean everything about ants, physiology, anatomy, you name it, everything about them. Then he uttered their secret name. Let's say it was Anthos. He uttered their name, Anthos, the word, and poof, ants were created. The first ants. And then they would, of course, reproduce and reproduce and reproduce and reproduce, all of which he had created in his mind. And he did that for everything that existed, including mountains and swamps and plants, all flora, all fauna, right? Germs, no matter what it was, Ptah created that. Now, how sophisticated is that? That's a pretty remarkable sort of thing. And all of that was done from his intellect. But to create the actual things that he created, he had to utter the word. The word. I love that. That's the power of speech. And we should remember the power of speech. We should remember the power of speech. Now, as we found out in the last election, there's also a lot of power and money. Right? Right. There's a lot of power and money. But what does money really... What is money? What is money in actuality? Money is energy. Money is energy in a solid form. When you go to work for someone, you work for X amount of hours, and they give you then, in exchange, money. And then you can do what you want for that money. You can trade it in for silly putty at the store. And you can then take that silly putty and do whatever you want to with it. You can turn it in for other things, for luxuries or for food or whatever it is that really strikes your fancy, right? Now, you can also take that money and you can do whatever, you can buy stuff or you can invest it in other things and try and make more money. But it's your words that have real power. Money has some power, but it's your words that have real power. And so you should always be confident and aware of the fact that your words are incredibly strong. And never misjudge that fact. Never underestimate your incredible strength when it comes to what it is that you can say and do with those words. I found that out just yesterday when I helped this young man at a drive-thru who was down, and I mean despondent, facing existential questions about his life, and in a very quick conversation gave him hope. I spoke to a friend of mine in the afternoon, and he was feeling kind of blue, so I told him the story about this young man, and it lifted him up in a way that I couldn't even believe. You know, and he and I are the same age. I'm 2 months older than he is. And we were talking. We had the same experiences in youth, but he was more timid than I was. I was a radical. I was rabid. He was innocent, more innocent. And he was right in the hotbed. He was in Berkeley, California. You know, he saw Angela Davis. He got tear gassed at Berkeley, you know. And man, I'd have been right in the middle of it. I'd have been arrested. He wasn't. He did get tear gassed. I've been pepper sprayed, but never tear gassed, thank goodness. Not yet, anyway. It may end up that way eventually before it's over. But our words have power, and they have power on this plane and on other planes. So when we look at the words that come through numerically, with actions in the other world, in the real world, I should say, we can take a look at them. So when this fellow who survived this horrible plane crash in seat 11A, well, and we read what those words were, what they stood for in 777. Now, what 77 is, I went out and I bought a Hebrew concordance. Of the Bible, a concordance of the Hebrew Bible. And I was quite surprised to find out that it was right in line with what Crowley had in 777. I could have saved my money, but it was all there. I was like, oh, wow, he did. And he didn't do this himself. It worked on it with a fellow by the name of Alan Bennett. I won't get into that story now. But you look at it and it's ruin, destruction, the fool, sudden death, madness, a holocaust. It's like, wow, an om. Om. The sound of the vibration of the universe is said to be om. That's what it's said to be. Are we listening to the universe right now? Hell no. Hell no. If we were, we wouldn't be starting wars. People wouldn't be starving to death. We're not being humane humans. We're being inhumane humans. We're being inhumane. We need to be humane humans. Love. What is better than the feeling of love? Love. What is better than that? I was telling my friend yesterday about what happened when I was about 15 years old. I was in a head shop in my hometown, a place called Mellow Yellow. It might still be there, I don't know. And it was kind of a cold day. And there was this young lady. She was a couple years older than I was. And so she was in high school. And I'll tell you about it. She was a beautiful strawberry blonde. And never forget it. She was wearing a purple coat and a red beanie, you know, yarn. And I caught glimpse of her, and I was just like, suddenly, oh my God. You know, I was 15 and a half, and I was just flushed and stricken. And she was trying out some oils, and she tried strawberry oil and patchouli oil on one wrist and strawberry on the other, so strawberry and patchouli, and she rubbed them together. And she said to me, because I was the only other one there, and she said, would you come here for a second? And I went over, and she said, she put her wrist up to my nose, and she said, smell this, what do you think? And I went, and I looked into her eyes, which were just amazing, as you can imagine, and I fell in love. I fell hopeless. I said to her, I think I've fallen in love with you. And she grinned, and she giggled, and she blushed. And she put her hands on either side of my face, and she gave me a kiss on the cheek. She said, hold that thought for later. And I never saw her again. But I remember her to this day. That was the 60s for me. And it was the 60s when that happened. That was the 60s for me. That's what it was like back then. That's what life should be. That's what it should be like. I so fell in love with her. I was so smitten by that. And I think she was a little bit too. I mean, I was just a kid, you know. I was just a kid. And she knew I was just a kid. I was in high school. What am I talking about? I went to the other high school, the other side of town. And she was so incredibly cute and everything that I'm still tongue-tied about it. Isn't that what life should be? Isn't that what we should strive for? Instead of starvation and killing and bigotry and hatred and revenge, you see? That's what these oracles we have teach us. Love. Love. Love is beautiful. Love is great and wonderful. And so this and these are the messages of the oracles. They teach us about love. And yet they also teach us that we as human beings, you know, We don't. So, when this plane went down, the message was about fools, you know, and about ruin and destruction, and about things that may be coming, and we just have to go okay. And maybe about the fact that there's greed out there, because this airplane had been in service for quite a while, and maybe it hadn't been checked properly. Why would you, you know? And I'm just saying, these are very valuable tools that we have. I checked the I Ching the other day. I've gotten to the point where I don't even worry about the book so much. I just will do an I Ching casting, and I will just think about the changing lines and what they changes to as far as the intermediate hexagrams. And I don't worry about the book or what the book says for the lines. I just think about where it goes to and what it ends up. And the meaning is so clear because these are images in nature. And you go, oh, I get it. Because all the answers we need are around us all the time. All we have to do is listen. And we don't listen. Where is there goodness in attacking others? Nature says, don't do it. Where does the lion lay down with the lamb? In nature, if the lion isn't hungry. You know, it's an easy, well, if the lion's hungry, well, you know, it may eat a few lambs and then eventually it'll lie down with them. The lion doesn't attack for no reason in the middle of the night because it fears the lamb has nuclear capabilities. There's usually some subterfuge somewhere. So last week when I felt this feeling of dread, I felt something was coming. It was a lot coming. And then this demented guy that my son knows, and my son is really freaked out about all that. He's a stable guy, you know, he's a strong fellow. But imagine your psyche if someone you know does something so heinous that it ends up on the front page of every paper in the country as the lead story on every news story there is, and you broke bread with him and had long conversation with him and didn't have an inkling of what he was possible of, but then we're all human beings. Who knows what other people can do? Wouldn't you worry about your son? I am so worried about him. I'm sure he'll be okay. But I immediately thought, oh my God, how is he dealing with this? Is he going to be okay? And he'll be fine. I know he'll be fine. But you go, what are the odds? Because it's a small world suddenly. These are the forces that bear down upon us in life. And we have to deal with them. Manifestation. Our words are power. Don't ever forget that. Luckily, we don't have to create the way Ptah did. But there's a very important lesson in that story that the Egyptians wanted to get across to all of us. Know exactly what you want out of something before you go to create it. Know exactly what you think you want. Because you may create something that is horrible or that has pitfalls you had never even considered. So there's great wisdom in that story of Ptah, the self-created. Great wisdom. And I believe in that. There's the old story about the monkey's paw. If you don't know it, it's worth reading. It's chilling. It's why I have, once I asked for money. I asked for a specific amount, a down payment for a house. Back when I was very young, my wife and I had just, you know, we needed money for a down payment for a house so we could be independent more. And I was stupid. And I got that money by getting rear-ended and having back problems for the rest of my life. I asked for 10 grand, got the 10 grand by getting rear-ended. And only later did I go, oh God, of course. And I still have back problems today because of it. So you realize, don't ever ask for money. It's a real dangerous thing to do. Because we can manifest anything we want. I've manifested almost everything I have. I know I have, including the troubles. Because it's not only possible, but probable. This is the very basis of what we call occultism, is self-manifestation and the creation of our lives. So maybe that's something I'll talk about more. Because it can make our lives so much better, or it can turn them into real bad things. I now believe I live a very good life, a happy life, regardless of what the world dishes out. I feel pretty confident and pretty competent and blessed. Having this show is one of those blessings. Thank you, Mark Husson, for making that possible. He's a good friend. I've known Mark for 34 years, and that's been a good thing. Well, thank you for listening in today. Think about these things. Think about how you think. Think about what you manifest. And know that you can manifest good and happiness. And think about what you say to others. And don't be afraid to tell them that everything's going to be okay. And hold that in your heart, because it's true. Trust me, everything's going to be fine. Lots of hope. Until next week, I wish you all peace and love.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.